So here we go. Today is the first meeting of the sitting group of the new year, of the new decade, in the new locale. It's Wednesday, January 6th, right, 2010, and I want to welcome everyone here. I thought of a nice way to start is to read from one of the very best known and best loved suttas or discourses of the Buddha. In Buddhism, it's called the Metta Sutta, or the Loving Kindness Sutta. And the way we often do that is each person takes a line, if you care to do this, and you can always skip. So you read a line, and then the person next to you reads another line. There are, I think here, about 40 or 50 lines. We may have more than 40 or 50 people. It's fine. So I thought we could do is in a kind of oh, pass them around. Pass them around more. Thanks a lot. Yeah. So does everybody have one of these kind of near you? Does anyone not have one kind of near you? Oh, we're good to go. I love it. And by the way, you can keep these. They're really quite sweet. Or if you have one already or just want to leave them here, you can leave them on your chair or hand them in to me at the very end. So I propose we do this in kind of a spiraling way. That I'll start, okay, then Mother Divine. Then we'll go around, kind of at the outside, and as we come here, then we'll do the next, if you will, circle, and we'll kind of spiral inward, okay? And you can always skip or turn to the next person. So I'll begin. Now let us chant the Buddha's words on loving kindness.
This is what should be done.
By one who is skilled in goodness.
And we'll go around the outside there, okay?
And who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright. Straightforward and gentle in speech.
Humble, not conceited.
Contented and easily satisfied.
Unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways.
Peaceful and calm and wise and skillful.
Not proud and demanding in nature.
Let them not do the slightest thing.
That the vice would later be cruel.
Wishing in gladness and in safety.
May all things beauties, whatever living beings there may be,
whether they are weak or strong, committing none.
The great and the mighty, medium, short, or small.
The seen and the unseen.
Those living near and far away.
Those born and to be born.
May all beings be at ease.
Let none deceive another.
Or despise any being in any state.
Let none through anger or ill will
wish harm upon another.
Even as a mother protects with her life
her child, her only child.
So is a boundless hope.
Should one cherish all living beings.
Radiating kindness over the entire world.
Spreading upwards to the skies.
And downwards to the depths.
Outwards and unbounded.
Free from hatred and ill will.
Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down.
Free from drowsiness.
One should sustain this recollection.
This is said to be the sublime abiding.
By not holding to the fixed views.
Pure-hearted one having clarity of vision.
Being freed from all sense desires.
Is not born again into this world. That was really cool how that worked, wasn't it? It just somehow worked, you know. All right.
And your wife blended, but...
That's it. I know. Some people got skipped. I'm so sorry. So I invite you to take a moment and imagine bringing that sense of compassion and goodwill. You know, the wish that one not suffer, the wish that one be happy. And for a moment, apply it to yourself. Just what's that like? The actual experience of wishing well to yourself. and having a sense of tender concern for your own pain, your own stress, your own difficulty. You might imagine someone with you who loves you. Perhaps a pet or a parent or a friend, a mate. You might put your hand on your cheek or your hand on your heart to give yourself that feeling of someone who's with you who really wishes you well. And nourished by their well-wishing, you have some of that same goodwill and kindness toward yourself. And then if you can, extend that compassion and kindness out over this coming year. Imagine it flowing, maybe, you know, kind of like a river or a current or a sheet of water over the entire next 12 months of your life. You know, wishing yourself well as you go forward. Over the events of the year. So take just a moment to imagine the major events of the year to come, maybe those you know about, maybe even some you fear might happen. And see if you can imagine continuing to extend goodwill, compassion, and kindness to yourself over the course of this coming year. Spring, summer, winter, and fall. The whole year. Being sure to extend all the way through the fall, Thanksgiving next year, or this coming year rather, all the way through the holidays. And as you do that, see if your goodwill for yourself can be carried by and can recognize your own heart's desire, maybe some particular longing that's wholesome and sincere. If you're truly wishing yourself the best, without clinging or striving, what's that heart's longing that you would wish for yourself, like you would wish it for a dear friend? In closing, see if you can find a sense of wholesome resolve, not straining, but rather out of kindness and fearlessness for yourself, a resolve that you keep nourishing the wholesome causes that lead to the fulfillment of your heart's longing. As the Buddha said, ardent, heartfelt, diligent, resolute, and mindful. May you give yourself over to those benevolent causes that will lead to the fulfillment of your heart's desire. Letting yourself be as big, as full, as wise as you really are. And then, coming back into this room, continuing to just settle into this mode of being, abiding here, let's take a few moments to just kind of, not yet, greet a few people around you. And as you do, truly take a moment to sense them and to extend goodwill to them. Just a brief encounter, a look, a handshake, a hello, move on to the next person. But if you can't, don't move on until you've had a felt sense of goodwill for that other person. So let's do that. And it's okay to talk to you for the next 3 or 4 minutes or so.
Hi. Rula.
Rick. It's okay to think in your mind something like, may you be happy.
I started your book yesterday. I love it. Oh, I love it.
Will you write a 5-star review of it when you're done, if you authentically feel it?
Oh, sure.
On Amazon.
Oh, I didn't think you could.
May you be happy. I feel trapped here. Okay. How, any comment or about that? Particularly the part about extending goodwill for yourself over the course of the year, and then allowing, you know, your own heart's desire to come forward as an expression of that goodwill for yourself. Yeah, please. Yeah.
In particular, like when I'm walking into a room and I have an agenda, my time schedule.
Yeah.
And I thought how nice it would be to actually walk into the room, not just in service to my own agenda. So that's really wonderful.
Great. Thank you. Another person? Yeah, in the back.
Thank you. I can feel the
energy rising in me with each person as a process. My energy kept going up and up. So it was building a little, kind of a little fire as it feeding itself.
Yeah. It is startling, too, to realize that as you wish them well, they're wishing you well. You know, you are on the receiving end of a handful of people sincerely wishing you well. You know, yeah. That's great. That's great. I think it is wonderful to use the occasion of the beginning of something that's symbolic, like a year, to establish intention and to imagine that intention as a kind of the greatest gift we can give ourselves in this coming year. You might ask yourself, you know, what is the greatest gift you could give yourself in this coming year? I mean, it's probably not a new car. There's a lot to be said sometimes for a new car, but it's probably not a new car. You know? Often the greatest gift we can give ourselves is something about a small thing routinely. You know? It's not yelling so much at ourselves in the mind on a regular basis, or it's truly laying down some kind of compulsive habit that is good in the short run but bad in the long run, you know, like drinking or, you know, kicking the dog or whatever that is, right? What is that for you? Or maybe it's honestly sticking your neck out and not taking things so personally or privileging so much thoughts of I, and actually sticking your neck out and reaching out for what you've been longing for your whole life. To tell someone you love them, or to ask them if they would love you, or hire you, or publish your book, or whatever it is, you know, or join with you in some good cause. What is that? Right? And to that end, I really want to encourage the refuge of practice and some kind of regular practice that brings you back to center. Right? Isn't it so powerful to come back to remembrance? Isn't there a sense of remembrance here? You know, like this is familiar, this feeling, this knowing, this place. It doesn't need to be invented. It's what's been there all this time. And then we come back, we remember. And that gives us confidence. Have confide means with faith, confidence. That we have faith, informed faith, that wow, this place is our home, is my home base. Right? So whatever it is that helps us come home again, right? Or recognize that we're already home. That's a good thing on a regular basis. I really invite you to consider some forms of some small, simple practices that you actually could commit to and stick with that would truly transform your life. Buckminster Fuller had this wonderful metaphor of the trim tab. He was a great visionary, and one thing I love about Bucky Fuller is that long before other people were doing this kind of stuff, he actually had a period where he decided in his early 20s, he had just gotten married, that he would not say a word unless he truly understood what it meant. So he was really quiet for about 3 years. It was kind of his version of a vow of silence, pretty much. And he's that kind of guy. Anyway, a trim tab, at the end of a big tanker that's maybe several football fields long, is a rudder, which is maybe 20 feet high and 10 feet deep. And that piece of metal, which is tiny in comparison to the whole ship, will change its course, right? But at the end of that rudder is a small strip of metal, about 6 feet long and about 3 inches wide, that's the trim tab. And as it moves one way, it pushes the rudder the other way, which then pushes the ship through the waters. That's the trim tab. And in our lives, there's usually a trim tab. You know, for me, it's things like, you know, meditating every day a minute or more, or every day establishing personal intention for what matters most in one's life, and saying it and recommitting to it. What's your highest purpose? What's your life's purpose? What's the overarching primary purpose you want to really name to yourself and recommit to every day? As soon as you can think about it after you wake up, which might be just before you go to bed that night, but at least you did it every single day. Right? Maybe a trim tab in your life is when you go to bed the night before. Right? That's a major trim tab for me. It sets up everything. It's that little thing that moves the rudder that moves the ship across the sea. Right? And then you want to set your life up to sustain that trim tab and not be afraid of how beautiful and large and beneficial you can become. Now, the Buddha talked about this about 2,500 years ago. And one of the all-time Buddhist trim tabs is mindfulness. The original word in Pali for mindfulness is sati. And the roots of the word sati have to do with memory or recollectedness. To be mindful is to be recollected. It means to be aware in a kind of knowing way of the content streaming through awareness. And the way that the neural circuits of awareness probably kind of sort of seem to work, no one knows for sure, really, it's like a large reverb circuit, you know, in this large sort of space that's afforded by the neural substrate that's constantly sort of moving and shifting, that seems pretty anchored, you know, in the midline of the cerebral cortex, in part linking with the thalamus, which is this great relay station deep inside the center of the brain. Anyway, as that, you know, neural substrate kind of moves around, in a sense, what it's doing is it's representing information to itself. That's how we be aware of things. Information gets represented back to itself. Do you see it has that recursive quality? It is recollected. And when we're thoughtless, when we're heedless, when we're lost in thought, there's no recollectedness, right? It's just streaming through. We're not registering that it is streamed through. And that's the fundamental meaning of mindfulness. It's interesting, isn't it, that the Buddha made mindfulness and nuances of it so central to practice. He said, as best we can gather, he actually said it. We never know for sure, but it's as close as we can gather, he said it. He said this great teaching, the Satipatthana Sutta, which means the four foundations or frames of mindfulness. And I want to read you a little bit of this and then talk about it in a practical way. All right? So it starts out, thus have I heard. And that is Ananda speaking. Ananda was the Buddha's cousin, his primary attendant. Ananda apparently was a prodigy of auditory memory. Right? He could just remember almost anything he ever heard. You know? So, and then he could recite these discourses. I'm sure there was a little bit of editing at least along the way, but essentially this is, you know, what Ananda heard. So Ananda says, thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One, the Buddha, was living in the Kuru country at a town of the Kurus named Kamasadama. There he addressed the monks thus, and by monks you could take this to be really all members of the community, monks, nuns, laymen, laywomen, lay all kinds of combinations that transcend male and female even, you know, people. Venerable sir, they replied. The Blessed One said this, people, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of suffering and discontent, for acquiring the true method for the realization of Nibbana, namely, the four satipatthanas, the four foundations of mindfulness, the four resting places of mindfulness. Okay? Isn't that interesting? He's saying, if you want to go all the way, if you want to be completely enlightened, be mindful. This is a sufficient path for awakening or getting as far along on that path as you get or want to get in this life. Mindfulness. The trim tab. So, why is mindfulness helpful? Why does it actually help to be recollected and to sustain recollectedness. How is that transformative, particularly in terms of undoing the causes of suffering, particularly craving and clinging as a central engine of suffering, driven by ignorance? How can it be that mindfulness helps undo craving and clinging driven by ignorance? Harold.
It's like a microscope for reality.
Yeah.
For inner reality.
Can you say a little more what you mean by that metaphor, the microscope?
It allows us to see what's going on.
Yeah. Other people? Yeah, please, you.
Just sort of recognize the impermanent nature of
yes.
those things, the 10,000 things.
Yeah, that's right. With the microscope, you really see how fast they change and how many come streaming through.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Mindfulness is knowing, which seems like the antidote to ignorance.
Yes, exactly. Precisely. Mm. Yeah. That's right. It's the anti-ignorance. My wife and I joked one time about, you know, anti-matter. There's anti-meta, right? You know? Ill will is anti-meta. Anyway, but you're right. It's the exact antidote to ignorance. Yeah.
Besides defining mindfulness, what does it feel like to you?
To be mindful?
Yeah, what's your sensation in being mindfulness?
Yeah. Well, right here, I'm seeing you and I'm knowing that I'm seeing you. Or more exactly, there is seeing you and there is knowing of the seeing of you. That's mindfulness.
I see. So it's the ability to watch your processing.
Yeah. To be present with what's going through without getting caught up in it.
As opposed to being part of it. You're distancing yourself?
There's often a, like one can be fully mindful in the dance of tennis or the tango mm-hmm. or lovemaking or muffin making. One can be fully engaged. Very often when we're not mindful, it's when we get lost in the simulator. In other words, we're lost in this sort of dreamy, you know that mood where we're just kind of ruminating? It's sort of daydreamy. There's a kind of a commentary. It's sort of a swirly. Maybe also we're kind of semi-planning or kind of working something out, or we're arguing with someone in our mind. There's usually a loss of mindfulness there, or where we act impulsively. You know, we just do it. There's no sense of perspective. The trap of mindfulness, I think, is in what you said, which is, it's an error to think of mindfulness as this detached observer stance and identify with that observer as a being, as a watcher. You know?
So you can be mindful and be totally caught up in anger.
If you can be enraged mm-hmm. and be mindful of the rage. A sniper, mindfulness is morally neutral. People have privileged it often in the West because it's when Buddhism came to the West, it brought basically the Dharma and it brought mindfulness. But a lot it did not bring virtue or community. And we're playing catch up, you know, 30, 40 years later. We bow to our great Dharma ancestors and we go, we need to bring some of the traditional things that were present, but they just didn't bring along for various reasons, like virtue and community. Critically important, isn't that right?
Yeah.
That's a lot, and it's very important to pay attention to that. So what's interesting, though, is that as one moves toward mindfulness, one tends to move toward a more benevolent orientation of people because, I think as you were saying, the more and more you see clearly, you start seeing that if you get angry at other people, it's much like, just like the Buddha said, you're throwing hot coals with bare hands. Both people get burned, you know. Or someone else defined, Stephen Guston, Monday Night Class, you know, one of my personal heroes, defined karma as hitting golf balls in the shower. You know. Right? So, okay. But yeah, you can have very powerful emotion and be mindful of it. This year I really want to explore mindfulness. And of the three fundamental pillars of practice, there's virtue, concentration, sometimes called mindfulness, and wisdom. They all really go together. And this particular year, I really want to go after this fundamental trim tab of steadiness of mind. It's difficult to sustain, number one, because Mother Nature gave us a skittery monkey mind. You know the phrase monkey mind? The traditional metaphor is that the monkey is the kind of eye, lives in a tall tower with six windows, and the windows are the six sense doors, you know, sight, touch, smell, sound, taste, and mental contents. And the monkey is darting from door to door to door to door to window to window to window to window, you know, jumping around. Well, Mother Nature gave us that kind of mind because that kind of mind helped our ancestors survive. They were constantly scanning for threats. Okay, so there's a natural tendency that sustained presence. It's easy to be mindful for two or three breaths, isn't it? Five or six in a row? 50 or 60 in a row? That's where the threshold is, isn't it? Isn't that interesting? You know, Mother Nature gave us a mind that doesn't tend to do that. And so we have to train it. We have to govern it. We have to practice with it. We have to be kind to ourselves as we do it and have faith that as we steady the microscope spotlight, you know, that shines the light and dispels ignorance, that, you know, an unfolding will occur that will get better and better and better for ourselves and benefit more and more people around us. So we do it, right? So this year I hope to go through this particular book. So by the way, it was not in print for a while, now it is in print because it's such a fantastic book. So I'm going to email out a link to this book to everyone. And if you have any difficulty getting it for yourself, I'll make sure you get it. I think it costs around $20, but I'll make sure you get it. And one way or another. What we might even do in here, we'll see how that goes. If need be, I'm sure we could take up a little discreet and private collection that would enable anyone who wants to get this book to have their own copy. So I really recommend it to you. It's beautifully written. It's about the four foundations of mindfulness. It's very clear. The guy who wrote it is a monk who's German by birth. He has unbelievable command of the English language. It's perfectly clear. So I hope to go through this book in general terms, but in particular, I really hope to support you in your own steadiness of mind. Because in addition to the challenge of monkey brain, monkey mind, right, we have monkey culture. Don't we? We have ADD culture. Pagers, emails, interruptions, the pace of modern life, things happening, the way people talk to us. It's hard to kind of get them to slow down. You know, it's really funny. I was on TV one time about 10 years ago in a little local news thing about a book. And my kids were watching, which of course makes a parent really happy. Your kids are watching you on TV, you know, even at some obscure regional news show. But anyway, and they said, yeah, Dad, it was really weird. Those news people, they didn't quite know what to do with you because you were listening to them. And I hadn't even realized it because I'm like a therapist and a normal person. I'm very polite, you know, kind of my North Dakota, Midwestern roots. And they would talk and I would just, I'd wait till they were done. And they weren't used to someone who waited till they were done. And I didn't wait a long time after they were done. I would just wait till they were done. And they kind of didn't know what to do, so they kept going. You see what I mean? So we live in that kind of weird culture. Right? And so even if we don't want to be ADD-ish ourselves, in effect, we get drawn in. So that's why also it's pretty important to understand, you know, the currents that we're swimming against here. And therefore why it's important to really get on our own side, to really help ourselves with our purposes, our practices, our friends, you know, our weekly occasions like this where we come together and re-find ourselves at home. You know, we hang out with other people who are also home, who are home with us, who help us stay home, help us remember home. That's a fantastic blessing, you know. The Buddha and Ananda one time were sitting together and Ananda looked out at the gathering of the people just like this, real people being together, aiming to suffer less, be happy and peaceful, and help others do the same. And Ananda said to the Buddha, this is half the holy life right here. Just hanging out with our friends, you know, home with our friends. And the Buddha, in a famous passage, said, not so, Ananda, not so. It's not half the holy life to be doing this at home with our friends. It's all of the holy life to be doing this at home with our friends. Any final thoughts or comments, and then we'll wrap up. So I'll lay out the path here. Don't worry about it. Next time, I want to talk a little bit more about how the brain does attention and how people in a regular way can bring more mindfulness into daily life. But just really encourage you and call you to come routinely. Let's keep doing this. Doesn't this feel good? Doesn't this feel like something you'd want to have in your life as a regular influence? Don't feel guilty if you need to miss some. It's okay. But doesn't this feel good to be home again with our friends?
Feels like dessert. Although I was totally selfless and volunteering for the logistics committee to set up, I knew the reason I did that was it would get me here early. I'd be here.
Yes.
I'd be here on the...
That's right. If other people think that's a good idea for themselves, there are endless openings for logistical help, and then we rotate it. You know. Any last comment? Yeah.
I want to say I appreciate your taping of these because I have listened to a couple of them, missed a few in a row, and you talk about that sense of community, even listening to it and hearing familiar voices, you know, speaking, and it draws you right back into the room.
Yeah, that's great.
Sense of community.
Yeah. Yeah, you're very welcome and very pleased that anyone would want to listen. So that's great. It makes me happy. Thank you. Yeah, please.
I just want to ask what your website was again.
Oh, my personal one is rickhanson.net. You can get there through buddhasbrain.com, which will take you there. And then the Institute's website is wisebrain.org, and they link to each other and connect. Thanks. And there are other resources there, other talks and other things I've written. Yeah, I'll email it to everybody. And again, this is not a college class. It's not a dense thing. The point is, this is a wonderful... One thing that also, I think, happened when people encountered Buddhism is they actually didn't study. And the Buddha recommended studying. Some of you have heard me tell the story. I'll tell it briefly. I had the great fortune to be in a room with a Dalai Lama with just a couple hundred people, which is a fairly intimate gathering for him, just after I joined the board at Spirit Rock about 10 years ago. And after wading through the security and this amazing experience of Spirit Rock, of this combination of armed guards protecting this foreign head of state with eagle eyes, you know, like walking death in a Buddhist center, with all these Tibetan people just running around gaily and happily, and all the guards themselves just giggling, basically, at this craziness. Then there's the Dalai Lama. And at one point, he turned to this room of people who are many, many teachers and senior students, and somehow I slipped in somehow at that point. And he said, you know, you've heard about blah, you know, Dhunarkirti's discourse on the Dhamma, right? And he looked around the room, and he saw about 10% of the faces going, and the others going, and you know, it was really funny. I remember this. He went, That was his scolding. And it was horrible. The Dalai Lama goes, It's like, oh, man, you just want to go out and get that book. So, and then he said, after he said, he said, study is important. You need to learn things. Otherwise, you become like little mouse. Happy but stupid. And that was the picture, of course, that was in the Chronicle, you know, the Dalai Lama going like that. So, don't be stupid. In other words, read, you know, a little study. A little study goes a long way. It's important. It's important to have a little study, to know this stuff. So, there's a place for that. Okay, so I'll send out that information. I encourage you to come next time. And how about we just sit for one more minute, then we'll officially close. And as you sit, I encourage you to just again come back to your good will for yourself, your good intentions for the coming year, and a giving over to those wholesome forces that will truly help fulfill your heart's desire. Thank you for your attention and your intentions. And may our sincere efforts truly help free ourselves and other beings from suffering and its causes. So thank you, and see you again.
Thanks.